The theme for the afternoon talk is the power of attention. Just a few months ago, I was flying to the east and traveling over part of the world through Turkey and Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. I think I was on to Australia or somewhere. And as those of you do when traveling, we often just kind of stare out of the airplane window and look down at what's below and passing over some towns and villages, etc. And my mind went back to 1967 and being on the road at that time. It was the height of the hippie era. A few of you will remember and a lot more of you won't. And you're lucky. And while making this journey, and much appreciation too for the wonderful hospitality I and the other hippies on the road received through these countries, it just struck me that the simple, rather self-evident truth that when just traveling slowly and on the ground, how much more we see and notice, and how those experiences help to give shape to our life, to our values, to a sense of who we are. And in a matter of what took about a year to make the journey across to Asia, took just a matter of hours in an aeroplane. And I mention it because I think there are, in rather a similar kind of way, it's important for us to create and make time in our life to take a more slow look at whatever you and I might be giving attention to. And we often don't realize that with the development, as we are engaged in here, with the power of attention, it not only helps us to see the object clearly, but also, and equally important, helps us to see who the subject is. And you and I live in a state of coexistence. What I mean by that is, you and I live as the subject in relationship to a whole range and variety of objects, called people, called places, called goods, called situations. And just as the object that who or whatever you and I give attention to tells us something about the object, but also, and equally important, it tells us something about ourselves, who is the subject. And it's very easy in this interrelationship of subject and object to believe and imagine that what's out there is really out there, and what's here is here, and there is a real difference between the two. And one of the tendencies that you and I have as human beings is to invest and project onto objects characteristics of what is not there. And this stops us. It blocks us from seeing clearly. And there are three common areas that this happens for us. And each one of them is really worthwhile our stopping, taking our time to really have a look at. So, because I want, as a human being, to understand clearly my relationship as a human being, as a subject, living in a world of objects. People, places, goods, whatever. One of the features that takes place is in the movement, in the projection upon things, we give a value to which it doesn't have in itself. And we all know we can go round the shopping mall and the supermarket, and we've got something in mind which we must have. And it has to be whatever the item is, a certain shape, or a certain colour, or a certain style, or a certain form, or whatever. And we're walking around with this picture in front of us, in front of our attention. And we're looking out there for something to match the picture. And we think, if I can find something to match the picture, then I'll buy it. And if I don't, I'm going to spend the whole day walking around, wearing out my shoes with the walking while I'm looking for a perfect pair of shoes. This is called madness. We have successfully made the transition in one or two generations from Homo sapiens to Homo shoppians. And this movement is to regard, I must have. So there is in the perception, there is some attention, there is some interest, there is some connection, but then the movement towards has the idea, if I get this, this itself, whatever it is, will bring me happiness. The amount of effort we put into it is never enough for what comes back. We put the effort in, we work hard, we make the money, but what actually comes back doesn't have a parallel to the effort we put in. We have to explore and look at what we are engaged in with our ability as human beings to what we put attention to. And we have to look at it very, very carefully. And we have to look at it so carefully to have a different kind of relationship with the material world. I had one person on a retreat with me who told me he would go shopping and he had such an addiction to the purchase of goods that because he was successful financially, he would buy expensive designer clothes which were too small for him to show himself that he could afford to buy them. Tragic. Tragic. Spending money on clothes with these silly little labels and buying clothes which were too small to show himself he could afford it. What? What? Did he need to meditate quickly? So sometimes the movement from within moves us towards, and we are not in charge of the situation. It's like a magnetic force, the power of attention. In the area of what we engage or connect with is the power to be able to stop and question. To be able to look and to see, do I need to move in this direction? Because so often, as we all know, the sensation which comes back, the pleasurable sensation, sometimes is incredibly short-lived. Sometimes it ends before you got out the shop. It ends. The pleasure is gone. One's got it. This inner movement of the power of attention also shows itself when it's unexamined in the world of information, whether it's called social, political, religious, anything. And how the power of attention, we turn our attention to something to learn about, to know about, to experience about, or whatever. And then once again, the ego comes in. It so easily identifies with that information that is coming to one, and our self uses it to build up on. And we don't question it. That's why we have loads of religions, cults, sects, political beliefs, conflict, confusion. Not because of what we've read, not because of what we have heard, not because what we have reflected about, but because something else has gone on inside of us that has grabbed onto something, made much of it, and used the object called the book, the theory, the philosophy, the science, used it to build up something inside. That can happen with anything, including Dharma teachings and practices. There are a few people who have come on retreats over the years, tragically have gone home as meditation missionaries. Had some experience, got some value, learnt a few things, and like these Christian fundamentalist preachers, gone home, determined to convert friends, family, poor neighbours, etc. Experience is there, listening is there, exploration is there, something happens for us so easily where the self builds up, holds, makes something of, and wishes to use it for some other reason. Another area, all a little similar, is in the power of attention, when we don't really, really give attention to, we easily use the power of attention in order to get attention. And we notice things and the perception comes in and distorts it. There are two very common ones on retreat. They get called in the Dharma world. The shorthand is VV and VR. That's the shorthand. VV is Vipassana villain. The villain, you know what a villain is? Kind of soft form of terrorist. A villain. Someone one doesn't like. Someone one feels negative towards. Someone to blame, to find fault. So people come together, whole group of people, and how very easily and rather quickly there is something going on inside of oneself, some agitation, and then one finds somebody, some poor devil, to throw the pressure that's inside onto that person. And we imagine that the one or the ones that we are looking at, the villain, the bad person, the problem person, the difficult person, the person that should have been on another retreat except the one that one was on, this person is on the receiving end. And one believes in giving this person attention that what we are perceiving about her or him is about her or him and not about ourselves. And one of the most common, and it would be a rare day I don't hear this, we're in a meditation hall and we all have our little space, our little patch, our little mat, our cushion, and people walk in at the beginning of the sitting, walk out at the end. And sometimes somebody's foot actually touches the mat of somebody else. It gets near to World War III. Who does she or he think they are putting their foot on my mat? And there's a sense of self-righteousness, and feels threatened and invaded and upset. And every time that person who had stood on one's mat comes in, one is giving this person so much attention. Is she or he going to touch my mat again? If we were in here for a month, we would be issuing passports and visas to be able to cross. Everybody would be their own little country, requiring permission. This is what makes countries. There's no country on the earth. There's no country in the earth, on the land. There's nowhere which says, this is here, this is this country, and that is that country. It's the mind. The mind says, you can come here and you can't come here. The mind makes a separation. The mind keeps in and keeps out. Where do we get it from? How come our earth, which belongs to all of us, has been so fragmented up? I think the last count, 192 countries. Sometimes if you're on the streets at night, you can hear the dogs barking. The dogs have territory as well. Those dogs stay up there, they daren't go into here, into one's the area or the arena where the other dogs are. They keep their patch. We've got the mentality of dogs. And it all starts with a perception, a view, a boundary, as we were hearing yesterday, and the inability to let things flow more easily. And we can learn a lot about ourselves by the relationship we have with people who walk in here and walk out. It tells us the whole history of our species on this earth. And it isn't easy, as one person was saying to me earlier, it isn't easy to be able to change a kind of controlling, holding perception and the anger or the criticism that goes with it to a welcoming one, to a generous spirit, to one with kindness and hospitality and allowing things to flow. And it's an extreme, extraordinary change in a human being to have a completely different way of looking and relating. But that's what the Dharma practice is about. And the other one, the popular one, is the VR. V, Vipassana, R, Romance. Sometimes, I must say, I'm not sure, to be honest, if I'm running a retreat or a silent partner forming agency. So again, whole group of people, and for sure there's the power of attention, and for sure with a few it will land on somebody. Ooh, interesting. And then with the power of attention, with the feeling of love, connection, romance, eros, or whatever, this begins to enter rather beautifully and sweetly into the perception. The effect of it is that one sees with those eyes. But the tendency of the mind is then to be looking for some kind of cosmic significance. So, we're coming in every day to the room, we're going out of the room, and maybe that person who you are giving the power of your attention to, they may not want it, of course, but you're giving it, before you walk in, your pair of sandals and his and hers are together. This becomes the most profound event of the whole retreat. I knew we were meant to be together. This is just the beginning. We have to start somewhere. And sometimes it's in the food queue. People collect their plate, and it just so happens that that person who you're giving so much attention to, that poor innocent person who's happily married with three children, and you pick up the plate now, and the energy has got so strong over the days there, and this person is in front of you mindfully, innocently, quietly getting their food, but he or she is in right, the one in front of you, and you've got the plate in your hand and you're so nervous and excited, the cup and the plate, the knife and fork are bouncing around everywhere. So at any time in the food queue that somebody drops a fork or a knife, now you know why. Just look at who's around them. So sometimes, with the view, with the perception, and with the heart, and in the silence, the dynamics of connection, love, appreciation, all flowing into the situation. Why not? In this, is there extra that's going with it? The fantasy life. Further projections. Wanting. Looking for. It's not just perception. It's not just the seeing, the connection, the view. But that extra, and this is where the power of the attention is so important. The acknowledgement of connections which take place. But to be clear, is there more going on which one knows in some way or other is unsatisfactory? Projecting into the future, planning mind, negativity, sexual fantasies, something going on inside of the dynamic which loses something. men and women being together, sharing in the silence together. And it often happens, and of course one's in the privileged position up here, sitting on the throne, as they say. But that in England, the throne is either two things, what the Queen sits on, or it's the toilet. You sit on the throne, you're going to the toilet. This is the throne. And so sometimes in the perception, in the way of looking and the giving of attention to, sometimes when I'm sitting up here, the tendency for some people is so strong, it happens regularly, that when the bell goes, the person's body swings round to look at the villain, or to look at the one with whom one has some romantic idea about. And one sits and one hears, doo, and then and then we have another division, the romantic and the villains, you see. Well, yeah. And we're forgetting, who is the person behind? Who is the person behind? The extraordinary power of attention, too. So, sometimes we acknowledge there is, we might call it the raw material, the human being, the goods. It's not only telling us something about what we perceive, but it's telling us about the perceiver. Not only telling us something about that which we are giving attention to, but what enters into our attention as we give attention to. I repeat, what is it that's entering into our attention with regard to what we give attention to? And we want to have enough power of attention to look at that. It makes the difference between living wisely and living with a lot of frustration, disappointment and disturbance. Sometimes, go to the inner a little bit more here. In the meditations, we've been speaking over the days together, sitting, walking, standing and reclining. There have been a number of themes, we might say, which we have been exploring and sharing with you. One of them is the power of attention to what is taking place in this moment. The further in time you and I move from the present moment, the more likely projection will begin. The further in time that you and I move away from the present moment, the more likely there will be projection and disconnection. We can look back into our past, we can sit and we select. The further we go away from this moment, the more likely it is that we won't be seeing clearly. Go back 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So much has happened between certain events years ago and the present. It's rare and it is unusual to really be able to remember clearly because of all the other things that have taken place in between. It isn't easy. We tend to exaggerate or underestimate or distort or add to. If we're really honest, when you and I are telling our stories, and those of us who have been telling various stories, I notice, you know, as a Dharma teacher one tells stories, and with nearly 30 years of tapes in the tape library in Guy House in England, little details get changed in the story that I've told. Little. And sometimes the story which I was telling 25 years ago, I still might be telling the same story, back and think, my God, there's not much relationship between what I said at that time and what I'm saying now. Similarly, with regard to the future, the power of attention is to be extremely clear about what I am trying to make with regard to tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, next decade. The further I go from the present, the more likely I'm projecting. And therefore, to be in touch with things as they are, to be much more clear, means, yes, I must give some reflection to the past. Yes, I must give some attention or planning to the future. But can I bring as much as possible the power of attention to the present? Could it be, if I really give attention to something, I will actually, real attention, I will actually give myself the opportunity to see more than what I usually do. And if I, here's this beautiful bunch of flowers and, and petals and cones, etc. And many times I just walk in, sit down, notice, short feeling of appreciation for what is right in front of my eyes. But what happens when I stop and I give real attention? It brings out a deeper response. I'll see more colour, I'll see the form, I'll see the shape, I'll see the detail. It might touch me that the kindness and the gesture, whoever it was, and I have no idea it was, who put it together and made such a beautiful presentation for us all to see. My power of attention begins to show to me more than just a momentary one. It touches a deeper place of connection, of love, of gratitude, of appreciation, of beauty. This power of attention we lose when the ego gets in the way. When the ego gets demanding. When the ego says, I must have for me. When the ego clings to views and opinions and beliefs, etc. We lose something that the power of attention is revealing. A beautiful thing to be totally attentive. And the word for that is meditation. It's a great service we give to ourselves to really give attention. In the meditations, hopefully, we are deeply interested to give attention. And one important area of this giving attention is to the breath and to the body. And part of the reason for that is the amount of projection again we are putting layers and layers and layers and layers of it on the body. We're hardly in touch with it. And it can show itself in appearance, it shows itself in all the kind of views that we have. It's so strong, to give an example. They asked teenage women in Britain between the age of 16 and 19 what their relationship is with their body. More than 90% said they were unhappy with their body. Why? Where's that story come from? Where's those images come from? Where's this projection coming from? What is it that we are doing to each other that men and women can feel so dissatisfied with their physical life? One of my daughter's friends, 24 years of age, just had breast implants, £3,800. Because she felt her breasts were too small. 24 years of age, one of 10,000 women every month having this done. What is it that we, men and women, have done to create such a dynamic? Somehow or other, in the various processes of events that go on, somehow meditation and awareness and the power of attention is to connect with things as they are, to bring out of the heart acknowledgement and appreciation for the extraordinariness of organic life. So in the teachings of the Buddha, he refers to the outer body and the inner body. The outer body, meaning, not metaphorical outer body, meaning here the kind of way we interpret, how we think about ourselves physically. The pictures, the story, the image, the idea that we have. What's the response when we look in the mirror? What do we see when we look in the mirror? And surely, positively, the worst time to look in the mirror has to be when we wake up in the morning. We go to the mirror. What the heck we want to go to the mirror for? Etc. I would have thought it would be the last place to go, but anyway. So, we project onto the mirror, and we think the mirror is revealing what's real. What? It's revealing the story. So the outer body is concerned with weight, size, shape, colour, etc., etc. To see the body in the body is to connect with bare attention to the bare elements of the body. Not concerned with size, weight, shape, colour, etc. Much more concerned with just earth element, and the water element, and the heat element, and the air element, and just to be with the elemental life, in which all the picture we have about ourselves, at least for a little while, gets the opportunity to drop away, and we're just with the raw experience and sensation. And part of the function of meditation process is really to connect with bare physical life, to feel the sensation of the life. This willingness to really feel the bare sensation of the life opens up the cells to something else. Stephen made reference yesterday in the afternoon teaching of this extraordinary reminder of the Buddha. Instead of seeing the body as self, to regard it as not self, to regard it not as my body, but belonging to nature. Coming out of the nature, time in the nature, and returning to the nature. Most of the worries, fears, problems we have around body exist because of a possessive relationship. What would it be to sit on the meditation cushion, to walk up and down here, to engage in standing meditation, and to keep remembering this is an expression of organic life. Not me, not myself, not mine, but an expression of organic existence. This will bring out not detachment, but warmth, respect, care, love, and not fear. Just learning to see physical life as physical life. beautiful thing to do, because we're trapped in the images, in the pictures. Must have noticed, sometimes we can't go and talk to another person because we get an impression from the physical and we draw a conclusion. We might draw a conclusion, oh, this person is whatever, obviously someone very special, and then one too nervous and stays away from, or this person is, oh, they're generating such negative vibes, whew, one keeps away from. The view arises, and just based on the immediate appearance, it blocks us from contact. And sometimes, I notice too, on retreats and in other environments, we see someone who looks, shall we say, deadly serious. Deadly serious. Walking around as though they weren't walking on the earth, but they were carrying it. And sometimes it only takes a little power of attention, a little love and warmth, and this heavy, serious, grim human being quickly changes just through our power of attention and connection, just through warmth. The coldness can dissolve. This is the power of attention. It has to be stronger than the picture. It has to be stronger than the idea I have about. It has to be stronger than my memory. You've had an argument with somebody. You've had a horrible time in the meditation hall. And then the memory is still there when you go out. The power of attention is to be very clear. What was is what was. And therefore the power of attention doesn't hold to the last meditation, because it's the last. And we have today and a new experience and a new opportunity. And that's the power of attention. It is to cut through all the layers that dump on our perception. All of them. This is called in the Dharma tradition liberating. And the power of attention is the key to this liberating understanding. Finally, I've referred in the talk primarily to the object that comes to our attention, whether it's called the shoes and the shopping mall, whether it's called the information and the views that arise, whether it's called Vipassana villain or Vipassana romance or whatever. In the deeper level of the Dharma and exploration, what is revealed, called shoes, views, body, villain, romantic, whatever, is not as significant or as profound or as extraordinary as that element inside which is revealing. Understand? We're so infatuated. Wow, look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Wow! Look at that. Look at that. Woo! Look at that. Woo, 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 woo. Look at that. That which is revealing all of that and much more. Now that is extraordinary. We are so projected onto the objects, we forget the extraordinariness of a human being whose consciousness can reveal it. Whew. We can walk out in the evening and we have this little thing here, and you look up at the night sky, this little thing here, because there's consciousness behind it, and this is a little instrument. Whoa, it reveals all of that. But even all of those stars and moons and galaxies, and even all the knowledge that there are more planets, more stars than grains of sand on this earth, whoa, big time, whoa. Yet all of that can only be revealed through the consciousness, through the power of attention. Everything passes through the attention. The core question is, does this extraordinary element called attention, called mindfulness, called meditation, called consciousness, that which is revealing, does it reveal something so profound which is not an object? Normally, attention goes to objects. The objects are constantly changing. Our relationship to them, constantly changing. Life is constantly changing. And we live in a world of, it seems like, constant change. To repeat the question, can the consciousness which is revealing, which is showing all these objects, people, places, situations, shoes, potential lovers, or whatever, can this consciousness reveal more than that? And in Dharma teachings, the answer is absolutely yes. Absolutely. Now what? We spent so much of our life, maybe all of our life, involved in one of two things, either in me the subject, or in that the object. We said it's all I've known. The object might be my future, or the future, or the past, or the present. Seen, it's either going to be seen, heard, smelt, tasted, touched, felt, or thought about. Nothing. What else could it be? And because I've lived in this, am I that preoccupied with myself, the subject, or I'm preoccupied with that which is called the object? You, this, that, or the other. This is all I know because my attention has only revealed this. And Dharma teachings say, pity. Big time pity. Missing out on something that really matters. Enough. Let's have a couple of quiet minutes.